I can't even think of her name. But I'll never be the same until I discover what became of my old flame.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Called upon an old friend, Rush Clovis, aka her old boyfriend, who we haven't seen since like season two or something, to help uncover corruption. Satine's back. Corruption. She's not really back. I'm just thinking of that. In the Baking Clan, there will be romance drama. Finally, Padme is back and doing things. And Imbo is freaking amazing, and his doggy is adorable. We're talking about an old friend this week. How you doing, Chris?
Do you think the old friend is Imbo's doggy?
Is that not the cutest dog?
Huh?
Is it not the cutest dog?
I like how he says good. Basically, you can tell he says good boy, whatever his name is, in Imboese at some point.
Yeah, I know. His name is Mary.
He's pretty awesome.
He is pretty awesome because, like, we saw him last season when the Hutts were there and, like, Maul was like, I will take over you, and they fought the bounty hunters. Merrick was there, too, but this time he was, like, he was all, like, snarling and fighting, but this time he was, like, a dog, and, like, he brings him a ball, and he brings him a hat, and he's like, yay, I'm a dog, and they're both like, I love my dog. I was very excited. I forgot how cute the dog. Because that's the thing. Like I've only seen this episode once. So, like, this arc, I only remember, like, three things from this arc. Which one was is in, I think, episode 3. And, like, one is, like, in episode 2. That's it. That's all I remember from, like, this, like, little 3-episode arc. So it was kind of like watching it new. So there's a couple of my notes was like, I forgot about this. Blah, 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 blah.
I was just glad to see Imbo.
Oh, God. I know. Yeah. Ugh. You know it couldn't be Cad Bane because Cad Bane would have killed everybody.
That's what I was... I was actually wondering that. I was like, this could totally be Cad Bane, but, yeah, Cad Bane's too good.
Cad Bane can't snowboard on his hat.
No. But there's something he could have done there. I don't know what, but yeah.
Well, he does have little booster rackets.
He would have been more effective.
Yeah, he has little booster rackets that he can fly with. So having a good week so far, Chris?
So far, so good.
We've been having so many, like, on and off again weeks that, like, when I sat down to do my podcast, because I was just like, I sat down on the outlines and I was like, how do I do this? Because I was on vacation, and then Megan was here, and which you by now would have heard those two episodes. So I was like, how do I outline? I don't know.
I'm drinking some nice cherry cranberry juice.
It's delicious.
It is delicious.
I have my coffee that I always have, and my Thrawn Alliance book. In big letters, like when I first noticed... Thrawn Alliance is wonderful. Clone Wars and Rebels, goodness, so far.
So you're
Can I
enjoying
talk a little
it.
Bit about it?
So you're enjoying it, is what you're saying.
I am. I'm like 200 pages out of like 360. And the only reason, because what I've also been doing is I got the audiobook too. So I'll get to the end of a chapter and then I'll pick it up on the next chapter in my audiobook as I'm driving to work. And then I'll just go to the next chapter and pick it up when I get home. And so I, like, was driving around today listening to it, and so I've been going back and forth, and I'm really enjoying it so far. Because what it is the very base premise is Emperor Palpatine senses a disturbance in the Force. And it's between seasons 3 and 4 of Rebels. So Thrawn has just lost at Adelon and just met the Bendu and killed the Bendu and all that Bendu stuff. And so Vader, being the catty bitch he is, brings it up every chance he fucking gets. Be like, oh, that failed like you did at Adelon. And Adelon just, like, look at him. Like, what the fuck, dude? And it's great. So that's, like, half the story.
He killed the Bendu?
Well, he got rid of the Bendu, I guess it should say. The Bendu dissolved into the Force, and Thrawn was like, I don't even know what that was.
Oh, okay, so you're just talking about that was the incident that we saw in Rebels, though, right?
Yeah, so this takes place after that, but before season 4.
Okay.
So it's in between seasons. But the thing about, like, the thing I was most looking forward to is the Thrawn-Vader stuff, because the other half of the book is Thrawn-Anakin, because Thrawn met Anakin during the Clone Wars. And because Padme, who is wonderful in this book, and I honestly don't think that she even needs the guys there, because she's been really capable so far, and, like, I'm just waiting for the guys to, I'm pretty sure she's going to rescue the boys, because the part where I'm at, they're in jail. And she's out and about and doing shit, because she's awesome. But she's on a mission, and one of her old handmaidens discovered a separate space in Wild Space, and so she was investigating it. And what happened to her ship? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. So she went off to go find her friend and see what happened. Well, she gets kind of delayed. So Anakin, of course, being Anakin, panics because he hasn't heard from his wife in 12 hours and goes out there himself. And Thrawn just happens to be there because we know from Thrawn, the first Thrawn book, is that when Thrawn was younger, he actually worked for the Chiss because that's his people. And he was exploring Wild Space and charting it and trying to figure out if the Republic would be a good ally for the Chiss, because there's some scary unknown thing in the unknown regions. And so he is out and about looking for allies because there's something scary in the unknown region that's threatening the Chiss. So he's watching the Republic to figure out if they're good allies or not. And he eventually deduces that they're not. And that's in the first Thrawn book. He's like, this Republic is weak and they're having this clone war and they're not good allies. So when he comes back in exile, quote unquote, he finds the Empire and he's like, yeah, yes, the Empire. They're really good allies. Let's join them. Yay. They can be good allies for the Chiss. Let's go. but the most interesting part is he is there because either A, this is all first Thrawn book. He's there to either make the Empire stronger so they're good allies, or if he deems them unworthy, he's there to weaken them so they're better targets. Which is something that is left out a lot.
It's very Thrawn-like.
That's very important to his character. So, because right. At any point, he'd be like, you know what? This place is not cool. I'm going to weaken it from the inside out. Okay, bye! Go attack them. Anyway, so he's on about looking for, like, allies. And Anakin shows up. And my favorite, they're just wonderful together. Because at one point, Thrawn is actually lower ranked than Anakin at the time. He's like, oh, you're a general. You're General Skywalker. And he's like, oh, have you heard of me? No. I haven't heard of you. Anakin's like, well, I'm really important. Thrawn's like, cool. So, yeah. Fine.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, and like Thrawn's like, I guess, okay, whatever, man. And at one point, he's like, well, what do you think, General Skywalker? And he's like, you're being really polite. He's like, well, you're a general. You outrank me. So I'm waiting for you to tell me what to do. And Anakin actually thinks, is this guy going out of his way to be annoying? And I'm like, no, he's being polite, Anakin, you dumb fuck. And it's wonderful. But pretty much what it is I'm just having a good time with it, because if this book came out, but like before season 4 of Rebels came out, like it would actually be very scary, because every time Thrawn says something, I would be scared that Vader would kill him. But I know they're both going to be okay. So Vader just comes off as being a really catty, petty bitch. And it's hilarious.
Well, he kind of is.
He is a catty, petty bitch. And it's hilarious. And I just laugh because
he's trifling.
Thrawn's men hate Vader's men, and Vader's men hate Thrawn's men too, so they're all being catty bitches to each other, and I feel like I'm watching that scene in Mean Girls, where, like, Regina is just standing in the middle of the hallway, where everybody is fighting around her.
That's how fascist governments work.
Yeah,
fascist empires.
it's so good, and I'm having so much fun reading this book. Just because there's just a lot of stupid stuff, too. Like, Vader almost has, like, a Sailor Moon moment, which I was just like, that's amazing. pretty much they're being attacked by bugs, and but they're mechanical bugs. So when these bugs hit them, they splatter and they start spreading this goo that turns them into statues. So they're frozen, and Vader actually uses the Force to wrap it around his body like Sailor Moon transforming, and so he doesn't get frozen. That's all I could think.
Oh jeez.
I'm just having the most fun with this book. I'm loving it. I'm just like, yay, my blue husband. Yay. So I'm so sorry, guys. I'm just having the best time. And as I was writing this episode, because I was telling Chris before, the Thrawn novel takes place post season 5, which is the timeline that we're in now. So as I'm reading this book, and Padme and Anakin are characters, and a lot of it is about their relationship, I'm watching this episode, which is their relationship comes into play, and I'm like, I see a lot of similarities between them. So it's fun. I'm having the best time.
Hope needs more Thrawn books.
Come on, Zahn. I have to say, there's a character named Karen Farrow, and she's the Commodore on the Chimera. And if anything happens to her, I will be finding Timothy Zahn at Dragon Con, and we will be having words.
I don't know. Sounds kind of red-shirted right from the top.
No, I love Karen Farrow. And when I say I'm going to have words with Timothy Zahn, I mean like, why did you kill Karen and stuff like that? I loved her. She's my favorite. Why didn't you... That is what I mean by having words. I'll probably just cry on Timothy Zahn and be like, why did you kill Karen? Not that Karen's dead. She's still very much alive and trolling Vader's men the best way she can. Because she's amazing. They're all catty bitches, and I'm very much enjoying this. And Padme's the only one that's actually getting shit done. It's kind of funny. The men are all fighting and being catty, and Padme is just like, okay, well, I'm just going to go over here and do shit. Bye. Actually, the part I read today was Thrawn and Anakin are all locked up. And Thrawn's like, you have a really interesting relationship with your senator. And Vader and Anakin's like, I don't have a relationship with her.
What do you mean? Who?
Oh, her? Anything.
I hardly even know her.
And Thrawn's like, well, you're just acting like you're closer than her just being a representative you're supposed to be welcoming. Because Thrawn has said several times to Anakin, he's like, the point of this is victory. And if the victory is stopping the Separatists, not saving Padme, and Anakin be like, yeah, sure, whatever. And his thought, he's like, but Padme comes first. And Thrawn's just staring at him like, dude, victory is stopping the Separatists. Victory. But finally, like, Thrawn's like, seriously, what's going on with you two? And he's like, well, we've known each other since I was 9, and we've been through a lot. We've lost friends like Qui-Gon, and we've been through a lot together. And so like, he was like, yeah, I mean, we are friends. And Thrawn just looks at him, he's like, friends. Right.
Special friends.
So it's just, I'm having the best time right now. Having so much fun. Anyway, we should probably talk about an old friend.
Special naked friends.
It's a human thing. Humans get naked with their friends? Yes!
She has great boobs. They're like 2 bags of sand. Sorry, that's a 30-year-old virgin reference.
All right. So, an old friend? Now that I've ranted for 20 minutes about Thrawn. All right, well, here we go. An old friend is the 113th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on March 7, 2014. It was written by Christian Taylor and directed by Brian Callan O'Connell. Some extra information for you. Following the original airing order from Star Wars Insider 134, An Old Friend was supposed to be the 5th episode of Season 5, along with the episodes The Rise of Clovis and Crisis at the Heart. An Old Friend was pushed back later to broadcast order. It did not air in Season 5 as originally scheduled. But chronologically, these episodes are in proper order with the rest of the series. According to the official database, Padme Amidala's handmaiden, Tecla Manau, survived the Clone Wars, went on to marry a writer while serving as handmaiden to the Queen Queen Kithlantha. However, an old friend ignored the previous continuity and depicted Manau's death on Scipio. And finally, the imagery and symbols of the banking clan are strongly influenced by Switzerland, a nation known for its banks and wartime neutrality. The mountains of Scipio are not unlike the Swiss Alps, and the complex gears and inner workings of the vaults are nods to Swiss clockwork construction. Do you know who else is an old friend?
Takes a licking, but keeps on ticking.
Are they like two old sandbags?
Like two sandbags full of sand.
How you doing this week, Yoda?
Not bad.
Are you jealous because I talked about the blue one I love so much?
Whatever.
Aww. Well, you're always my first love at heart in very friend ways with the 30-foot pole.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm cheating on you with Ron.
Well, maybe listen, you should, to this platitude.
That's actually a really good segue. What is the platitude then?
I'm on his game, Yoda is.
Yeah, you are. I didn't even realize that. Good job, Yoda.
To love is to trust. To trust is to believe. In bed.
You know, Yoda, I'm sorry. You're always my first love.
Number one.
You're my favorite green person. He's my favorite blue person.
Just green is blue with yellow, too.
That's... Where's the yellow coming from? I was hoping you would not do the creepy laugh because I realized what you're... Act one! Act one!
Act one.
Act one.
I didn't like this platitude. I thought it was mushy. I'm glad we found a way to ruin it.
Mm-hmm.
Not surprised that we did, but I'm glad we did.
It's sort of like the opening of Act One. Did you find the open narration ridiculously too complicated as well?
Yeah, I just sort of phased out on it. I was like, I don't need to know this.
It just kept talking.
Yeah,
okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought
what
so ebbs, too.
I was like, I'll okay. figure it out as I go along.
Yeah.
They need a loan. They need some money. It reminded me, actually, like...
That's really what it was. They needed money. They're in wartime and they need money. That's all they needed to say.
We're going to get our money from the bank. From the guy, it was sort of more like the machinery and stuff more reminded me of like the Harry Potter, what was it, goblins that ran the
bank? Yeah, the Gringotts.
Yeah, Gringotts, yes. There was a little bit of Gringotts to it.
Well, Act One. And probably the most complicated opening narration of a Clone Wars episode ever. Padme is going to the planet Scipio, where the banking clan lives, to get aid for planets in the Outer Rim. Because they're neutral and use their money for both the Republic and the Separatists, all the money transactions must be done on Scipio, who is neutral in the war. Long story short, wars are expensive. Padme is there to make an ATM transaction for the Republic. Was that really so hard to say, Clone Wars? Anyway, Padme arrives with her handmaiden Tekla, that we met a few seasons ago when Padme had to write a speech, and Tekla was like, "Dude, my family is hungry and I never see them." And Padme was like, "That's my speech idea." And if I recall correctly, we weren't really big fans of that episode either. They meet with the Mun banker, one of the banking clan dudes, and greet them on the platform. But Embo with his adorable pet Anuba, Merrick, is watching them. And he sends a probe droid that Merrick delightfully brought him like a cute little puppy dog he is. And they go and they send it after the probe droid after Padme to watch her. And the Mun says Padme's crew gotta wait outside since this is a neutral zone and no fighting. She enters the bank with Tekla as Imbo's probe droid follows. Padme comes to before the Council of Five, who are like the people in charge of the banking clan, to ask for a loan. And they want her to meet with their special representative, Rush Clovis. Who apparently wasn't killed on Geonosis last time we saw him. He's there all for business, but Padme points out that he's a known separatist and a traitor to the Republic. And in case you forgot, because I actually really did truly forget what happened in that episode and I had to look it up, here's a Clovis recap. The Republic thought he was a spy for the Separatists, and it turned out he was. Padme and Anakin discovered he was working for Poggle the Lesser and Lot Dodd to build a factory on Geonosis. Padme got poisoned, and Clovis chose to save her life and gather and gave her and the plans to Anakin, and they left Clovis behind to die. Anyway, Padme is still pissed about all that and the fact that she almost died because, I mean, really, would Anakin actually tell her that her ex-boyfriend actually saved her life at the cost of his own life? No, this is Anakin, I'm gonna pee on my wife to mark her with my scent Skywalker, who probably took all the credit for himself. Until Clovis is removed from the negotiations, Padme won't work with the Banking Clan and leaves Clovis behind with a sad puppy face. That night, Padme and Tekla are in their room where Clovis, not sketchy at all, climbs onto her balcony like a creepy Romeo. Tekla warns her, and Padme pulls a blaster out on him. Clovis needs her help, and she's not too willing to help him after she got poisoned, and he was working for the Separatists. But he really needs to talk to her, and Padme wants to hear him out, even against Tekla's wishes. Pretty much, he gives a quick explanation about the Banking Clan, that the Banking Clan is on the verge of collapsing because of the war, and they have a ton of money missing, and wars are expensive, guys! And the evidence is in the vault, where only the Core 5 can go, which is awfully convenient that the people in charge of the missing money are the ones that have access to it. He wants her to put pressure on the Core 5 to let her inside the vault to see for herself, but Padme's not buying it. And suddenly, Embo pulls out his bow rifle and fires, not at Padme, but at Clovis. And they take cover while Embo rains blaster bolts at them. And finally, Embo runs, and so does Clovis, hopping on his speeder and zooming away. What'd you think of Act 1?
My first instinct was that I'm like, this is a fake assassination attempt. My first thought was, and we'll see if that plays out in the next two parts, but I was like, oh, Embo might somehow be working with Clovis and make it, you know, that would back up his story a little bit that somebody was trying to kill him. You know, because Padme was just not going to believe him out of hand.
Yeah, I actually have that note, too, because, like I said at the beginning of the episode, I didn't remember this episode. So right. I was like, Embo's a really talented and very skilled bounty hunter, and he is missing the crap and just firing wildly at things.
He's like a stormtrooper in this episode.
And I put, it's almost like someone wanted to help Clovis get a message across that he's in danger so Padme would believe him.
Yeah, right. That was totally my thought. I just love the name Scipio.
I think he said that the very first time it was brought up. Like, I think in the first one, he was like, I'm from Scipio. And you were like, I love that
Scipio.
Name.
I want some Scipio cereal, some Scipio peanut butter.
That'll be all, Scipio. Go eat your dinner. Yay, thanks, Paul.
I think they should be called Scipionosians. Because they all got big noses. Which, that's another thing, I may have mentioned it before. I think it's kind of sketchy that like, you know, there's always, like in conspiracy theory racist circles, there's always like, oh, you know, the Jews own all the banks. And here you have these bankers, and they're one characteristic that binds them all together are massive, massive noses. They all have like chessboard faces with gigundous noses, and it's just like, come on, George Lucas. Every time, yeah. George Lucas.
Though, like, after, like, reading about how Scipio was based on Switzerland, I was like, I can see that. This is a very Switzerland-like place.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the Alps, and they made sure that you knew it was cold. You could see everybody's breath when they were outside, and yeah, it was very much like that. I liked like when they were inside their inside the bank, all the screens are like gold colored. You know, there was everything was bathed in gold cover. It was like Trump Tower or something. You know,
I was thinking gold, Austin Power gold member. It's
gold. Yeah, it's just I mean, I think that's just a big trait of Clone Wars, is just these great lurid, kind of obvious color schemes. I think it works great. My only other note is, poor Padme. She's got this guy. He's still obviously got the hots for her. And he's just doomed because he's an idiot. And, you know, he's got to compete with a Jedi Knight.
So shouldn't you say poor Clovis, not poor... Well, I guess poor Padme, because she's just like, oh, great, it's you.
Right, she's got to deal with this clown. And he's trying to impress her by making his point, and he's doing, like, close-up hand magic to make his point where he's just like, they tell you this, and then, you know, and he makes this thing, he palms something in his hand, and it's just like, fool, she's married to a Jedi who could actually float a piece of fruit over to her for her to take a bite out of.
Sand.
And here you are doing some, like, street magic trick that you've learned in practice. He was probably just, like, practicing that one in front of the mirror, like, hey, Padme, watch, you know. And then it disappears. Oh, shit. Let me try that again. It would have been great if he screwed it up and it, like, fell out of his hand or something, or, you know, dropped out of his sleeve later. But, yeah, it was just funny. It's just like, come on, clown, you know. Here's a guy who can push spaceships away with his mind, and you're gonna try to rise to that occasion. He doesn't know, but it's just sad for the poor little guy.
There's actually a moment I realized that Tekla knew who this was, because when Padme was standing in front of the Core 5 in, like, the main room, and Clovis comes in, Tekla sees him first, and she glares at him like, oh, it's you. And then Padme turns around and sees him.
She sees his, like, picture. She saw his pictures in Padme's old yearbooks.
Yeah, like, I have a feeling that, like, Tekla knows exactly, like, what happened, who this guy is, why he's bad news, and she was just like, meh, it's you.
And his name, Clovis, is just, it just is a creepy, crummy sounding name. I'm sorry to any Clovises out there. It's not that bad if, like, you're a woman named Clovis. It would sound old-fashioned-y, but, like, some guy named Clovis is just, like, it's almost like Cletus or something. I don't know. But that's all I got.
Well, for me, the rest of my notes that I haven't already said is, everyone in the show needs to have a pet, because Merrick is a precious puppy, and I want 12 of them.
If this had been a cartoon in the 70s, everybody would have had a little cute pet and mascot.
Imagine if they all had, like, pets, like familiars, and
that's what R2. Like... That's who R2 is.
Aww.
That's totally R2's. R2's Lassie.
He is. What's that? Anakin's in the well? I guess we'll have to go save him. R2, come... They actually have an episode called R2, Come Home, so... Right,
exactly.
He is
the
dog.
He's a little bit of Snoopy, too.
But, you know, this episode has all the setup of being a boring episode about banks and politics.
That's what I was thinking at the beginning. I was like, oh, a political episode in the last season.
But then in the first 30 seconds, they show Imbo. And so you're like, this entire episode, you know that Imbo is just lurking somewhere, which adds kind of like a heightened tension to it. Because you also, you think he's probably after Padme. But we then find out he's after Clovis, which adds, like, kind of like another, like, a different twist, because Padme's like, huh, I'm getting shot at for once. This is nice. Wow. But, like, I like that they showed Imbo, like, right at the beginning. They run the opening convoluted narration, and they're like, oh, the Clone Wars is expensive, and Padme is here to make an ATM withdrawal. And then you see Padme walk on the platform, and then boom, Imbo, he's there. And so it automatically just sets the tension higher. So it's not like the other political episodes of, like, season 3, where it's just like Padme's going to the banking clan and then she's talking to them and then they go in the vault and then she gets on her ship and she leaves and that's that. Like, it's not like that, which is nice.
Correct. I agree.
Yes. And my only Indeed. Other note, my only other note that I had, because Padme was like, well, I'm not talking to any of you people until Clovis is gone, because I don't want to work with him. And I'm surprised the banking clan wasn't like, you mean you won't talk to us until you won't get us to give you your money until Clovis is gone? Cool. We'll keep all the money then, because you desperately need it.
Well, they're acting like they're up up to something, because if they weren't up to something, or if they were, or maybe they're just spineless like the Nemoidians. You know, I think they're intimidated by her a little bit, because they could totally be hard asses. And it may be because I was thinking of it like Gringotts, because those goblins in Gringotts are hard asses. And so I was thinking, these guys are bankers, they're going to be like, but I guess they are more like the Swiss. They're kind of meek about it. And I think they're kind of acting guilty because they're not giving her any kind of blowback. She's just like, you know, I'm not, she's calling the shots, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is at this point, they really only have like two people that they work with, and that's the Republic and the Separatists. So if something happens to, say, like Padme, and she doesn't want to work with them, you know, I'm sure the Republic owes them a lot of money. And so they could pull something like, well, you didn't want to work with our senator, so therefore you don't work with us, and we're not going to pay your money back. And the banking clan could be like, but that's half of our money.
Yeah.
Why? But that was just a moment when she was like, well, I'm not going to work with you. And they're like, fine, we won't give you money then. Like, oh, cool. That's fine. But that's a good point. They are kind of in between. That's all I have for Act 1.
All right, Act 2.
Act 2. You ready for Kim Kardashian?
Am I ever?
Act 2. After the police leave the scene, Padme phones into Papa Palpatine, briefing him on what happened. Papa Palpatine asks if she trusts Clovis. Padme, for some reason, says yes, she does trust him. He says then, in this case, she needs to listen to Clovis and find out what's happening. She comes before the Core 5, where Clovis is waiting, and accepts their offer for Clovis to negotiate the loan, but under one condition. She is going to go into the vault and watch the entire process from beginning to end. And the Core 5 thinks this is a stupid idea. And Padme is like, I wonder what Papa Palpatine would think of that. It sounds like you have something to hide, and the Chancellor would love to know if you do. And Clovis adds, with the attack on the Senator from the previous night, they should be as transparent as possible with dealing with her. And the Core 5 agree to open the vault in the morning for her. Clovis flies Padme and Tekla to a house at the top of a mountain, which is his personal residence. You know, away from the city, and people, and guards, and a terrible place in case you don't want to get killed without anyone knowing about it. And they go over their plan on how Padme will get evidence they need. Clovis will detonate the power grid, giving Padme a small window to act while the vault's in shutdown before emergency power kicks back in. Easy peasy, but not really. Clovis hopes that this will expose the real criminals in the war, but Padme knows it's war profiteers, and no one cares about that. And well, Padme excuses herself for the night and leaves Clovis to ponder his blue balls. The next day, they arrive at the vault, where the door is touched and activated by the Core 5, and they open the door. And they open their Scrooge McDuck vault, full of gold, and Padme goes in with them. When Clovis tries to leave, a Mun stops him, saying that this was his idea, so he should probably stay. So, he passes the detonator off to Tekla to continue the mission. The vault door closes, leaving Padme inside with the Core 5. Outside, Tekla attaches the detonator to the power grid, but Imbo's probe droid is watching her, and moments later, Imbo takes a shot and kills Tekla. Pour one out to the handmaiden! You seemed really cool, and I wish we knew you better! Yay! And the detonator goes off, messing up the power grid, shutting down all the power in the bank. Padme dashes away from the Core 5 and makes her way through the vault. She quickly finds the files she's looking for and downloads them. She meets up with the Core 5, who got the vault door cracked open, and she pulls her best Kim Kardashian, going, "Do you know who I am? Hold my poodle! Hold my poodle, because I'm mad as hell! Who's going to answer for this? You guys got something to cover up? No, you guys don't know who I am. I am Padme Amidala, bitches, and I'm not happy!" And all the Mun are like, "We're sorry, ma'am. Please don't call Kanye on us." And Padme is like, "I'm not gonna call Kanye. I'm going to tell Papa Palpatine about all this." And she leaves with Clovis. What'd you think of Act 2?
Man, they just
totally are oblivious or they're totally playing a game. The bankers, I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Because she's... everything about this is suspicious. Should be suspicious to them, like, in the extreme. But instead, all it takes for her to go is, this is very suspicious in the extreme to them. And they're like, oh, oh my. You know, so now I'm starting to think they don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I like it that it's that they're sort of switching you back and forth on that stuff.
I mean, I know we're not at Act 3, but there's that point where, like, Anakin's like, they said that Tekla blew up the power grid. What's happening? And, like, yeah, Padme looks at her like him like, yeah, I told Tekla to blow up the power grid.
She didn't even because Tekla's just game. Tekla just like saw what had to be done. Mm-hmm. And when they were like, oh, sorry, Clovis, you don't get to go on take a bathroom break. You're going to stay right here. You know, she palms it off from him and goes and, does it. It's all done without a word, you know, just passed between the two of them. So she was down, you know, she wasn't just like, hey, I'm just here to do my job. You know, she was good. She was committed. You gotta hand it to her.
That actually is like my big note of the section. So can I go ahead and say it?
Yeah.
So I'm really excited because we talked about this in our episode of Megan, that they announced a Padme book coming, I think, in like March or something. And it's going to be about Padme going from queen to senator. And it's also going to be about her handmaidens. And I'm really excited about that because all of Padme's handmaidens that we know about so far are incredibly capable. The two examples that we have is, as of right now, and I said, sorry, guys, I'm going to be talking about Thrawn a lot. In Thrawn Alliances, Padme has a retired handmaiden named Duja. And Duja, all by herself, discovered a separatist base in Wild Space. And so she called it Padme, and Padme went to look at it, and that actually prompts all the past stuff with, like, Anakin and Thrawn and Padme. And Duja, as we find out in this book, is pretty much a fucking spy. Like, she has her own ship with its own tricked-out abilities that has cloaking devices. Like, she's pretty much a spy, and she's damn good at her job. And then here in this episode, we see Tekla. And we know that Tekla's a mom, and she's a handmaiden, but she has zero problems taking this bomb, going into a power grid, sticking it on the thing, and blowing up the fucking thing and dying for it. So I'm like, I just find these handmaidens of Padme's, like, incredibly interesting, because they all are just, seem like they're super capable people, and they all know what needs to be done. So I'm actually really, really, really excited to find out more about these women and how they work with Padme in the book next year.
Yeah, they can pack her bags up and pick out her outfit and fight to the death.
Yeah, so I actually would love to learn. I wish we got more of them.
If that's just a trait of handmaidens in general, or if that's a trait of the ones that Padme picks out for herself.
Well, we know in episode one of her handmaidens like was her decoy and was like, you know, she was killed for and she was ready to die for Padme. And like I find these like women like super fascinating because they're like kind of like unspoken heroes. Like we're used to like the Jedi and stuff.
That's badass in like bravery, loyalty manner, but you know, they're also badass in like James Bond manner too, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It almost puts them in the bodyguard territory.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if they all double as, like, Padme's bodyguards as well. We actually kind of do know that because of the one that was the double in episode one.
Right.
She was that position because she was protecting Padme's life.
Well, my other notes are mostly really just sort of, like, surface stuff, lightweight stuff. I love Clovis's jetliner ship that they cruise out to his house with. I like it. It totally looks like a sort of just like futuristic space jumbo jet. I like it.
It has a dumb name. It was so dumb I didn't put it in the episode notes.
Yeah, I don't want it to ruin the coolness of.
It's called the Scipio. He's the skipper of the Scipio.
It's the Scipio. All right. Clovis is a creeper, man.
Yeah.
All right, he's a creeper. So he gets her back to his place, and, you know, he first of all, he's definitely all disappointed when she's like, well, time for bed. And he's just like, oh, God damn it. But even, like he's like, okay, here's the animation of what we're going to do. He'd already made, like, a little Padme avatar who's running around in there, you know. Who knows what other, you know. He probably had Yoda in as a consultant, and who knows what other simulations he was running with his Padme subroutine. Just creepy. Another sort of little precursor to Last Jedi, Canto Bright, where they're talking about war profiteering. And, yeah, just a little reminder, like we used to get with Cad Bane regularly, and with what's his name there, the pirate?
Imbo?
No, the other pirate.
Oh, Hondo?
Hondo. The other pirate whose name ends in O. they're murderers. Because I was like, yay, Embo. And Embo's usually, whenever we're seeing an adventure, we're on the side of Embo. This time it's like, oh, Embo just killed somebody. we're on their side. Oh, yeah, that's right. Embo's a hired killer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I've always liked about Clone Wars, too, so.
He's a hired killer with a cute dog.
Yeah, but he will kill somebody, and he does, you know. So, yeah, and they sort of fake you out, too, because he's missing all the time. So you're like, oh, he's just aiming at her again, and it's just like, oh, no, he got the red shirt.
And that's the difference, because Act 1, he was just, like, firing blindly, like, wildly, and bolts were flying everywhere. This time, one shot, bam, she's
Ping.
Dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's all I got.
Really, my only other... A couple of my notes... I only have two other notes. My first one is I'm just happy Padme is back and doing things and being active in the show.
And actually, not just being active in it, but yeah, she's actually proactive and kicking some ass.
Yeah, I mean...
Back to form. In form.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun watching her go against Tarkin, like in a trial and stuff, but like this is like season 2-3 Padme, like with a gun and like outsmarting people and like being a secretive and spy-y and stuff. Spy-y! though I have to say,
spy-y!
This is a double note, a two layer note, because on one hand, if it's true, then cool. If not, then it's dumb. Or other way, if it's not true, it's cool. If it's true, it's dumb. I have to wonder if Padme is sort of playing with Palpatine a little bit to get to the bottom of things of what's actually happening in the Bacon clan. Because he asks, he's like, do you trust Clovis? And she's like, yeah. But I don't think she actually trusts Clovis, but I think she actually wants to find out what's going on. Because something in the back of her mind is going, something's off here. And I think she needed the approval of Palpatine to do it. So I don't think she actually trusts Clovis. But if she's telling the truth and she does actually trust Clovis, then she's dumb.
Yeah.
So
well,
I took
well,
it
you
as...
Know, it depends on how much, you know, because she kind of... She should probably not like Palpatine, but he comes from her planet and was sort of like... He was there back in the Anakin days when he was the kindly senator. So...
You know what, though? Palpatine has never... that she knows of. He's always played nice and fun with Padme. And, of course, we know in the background, he's like, kill Padme.
Right,
but,
right.
I mean,
no,
but,
he always
I mean,
treats her with, like, a level of respect because, you know...
Yeah,
like
the uncle.
I've known you since the old days, so...
Like the Naboo uncle that everybody is
yes.
loved. But my only other note is Clovis takes Padme to his house alone in the mountains with Tekla. Red flag, girl. Red flag.
Yeah.
So, but that's all
At
I have for
Tekla
her
was with him to cock block.
Yeah. So.
Not that,
I was
Padme
actually
needs
expecting,
that
like,
anyway.
Tekla to be like, ma'am, it's getting late. We should go to bed.
Well, that's the thing is, Padme can take care of herself. She's got to wrangle Anakin. She can take care of a Clovis and his hand magic in, you know, 2 seconds.
That's true.
She could literally probably pick him up and chuck him across the room, you know?
I wonder if her handmaidens know that she's married to Anakin. I feel like they would have to know.
I don't see how they couldn't, if she didn't tell them, how they couldn't have figured it out.
Like, the first time he showed up to her house, or, like, they came to bring her morning tea, and he's there in his underwear.
But I'll bet you handmaidens have a strict, you know, sort of Las Vegas rules, you know. Once you're, you know, they have a keep it within the family, the immediate family rule, I'll bet. That's probably part of handmaiden training. So, yeah, they probably do know whether they're supposed to or not.
Yeah, true.
That would be a great, great story or novel or short novel from, like, the handmaiden's point of view, just figuring out the whole Anakin Padme deal.
Would it be called The Handmaiden's Tale?
Oh, The Space Handmaiden's Tale.
I've never seen that show, so
Star Wars, A Handmaiden's Tale.
I don't know if that... Well, maybe that's what the new Padme book is about, because she's transitioning from queen to senator, and maybe they're like, oh, ma'am, you're married, and one's just like, oh my god, I just saw Anakin Skywalker's dick, and she's like, it's okay, it's okay. It's my dick, it's fine. Don't touch it, it's mine. I'll dismiss you. And by dismiss you, I mean cut your eyes out, it's my dick. Anyway, Act 3.
Well, there we go. Sure, Act 3. Hope, okay.
Alright, Act 3. This is actually where the bulk of all my notes are.
Here's where all the stuff really gets going.
Yeah. So, Act 3. Later that night, Clovis and Padme check their files, and they see that the Republic vaults are empty, just like Clovis said they were. But before they can do anything, the Mun police barge into the room. They say that Padme is under arrest for espionage. Despite Clovis trying to say that there's been a mistake, Padme goes willingly with the police. Hold on. Sorry, I had a burp. A few days later, the Republic ship lands, and it's none other than Kanye West, a.k.a. Anakin arrives with R2. He meets Padme in her jail cell, and he finds this all very funny. But she says that Tekla is dead, which is a bit of a mood killer. And he says that she was found dead at a bomb site, and that she sabotaged the power grid. And Anakin's like, that certainly can't be true, because that means she did it on your orders, which would be hilarious, right? Not true? What's happening? And Padme says, I have to get out of here. Clovis has, and at the name Clovis, Anakin goes into a rage, and all the nice feelings end. Anakin is the worst, not even hearing out his wife, not trusting his wife, not finding her capable because Clovis is involved, and even saying that he might just leave her behind, so she better come with him now, before he changes his mind. Ugh. Part squeaks me out. She leaves with him, and they head out for his ship, but Padme insists she cannot leave without the files that Clovis has, and it's probably at his house, which Anakin is not too happy about. He tells R2 to be ready with their ship, and they take a little speeder to head to Clovis' crib, which must have been really cold, by the way. They had no jackets and flying through the Swiss Alps. They get to Clovis' house, and Imbo's little probe droid is nearby watching. Inside, the place seems abandoned, and Anakin's like, good, maybe he's dead. But Anakin reveals himself, Clovis reveals himself, happy to see Padme okay. And he tries to hug her, but Padme's like, nope! This is Anakin! Say hi, Anakin! But Clovis thinks Anakin is the pilot from season 2 a long time ago and will not give him the disc with evidence. And Anakin reveals that he's a Jedi Knight. But Clovis is like, I'm not handing over the files just so you can leave me behind, like, to die, like you did on Geonosis, again. And Padme is like, oh my god, girls, you're both pretty! Shut up, because we have work to do. And suddenly, Anakin senses a disturbance and tells him to get down just as Imbo starts shooting into the house. And they make a run for the speeder. But Imbo's doggy Merrick is after them, and Anakin, you better not hurt that puppy! And he parkours up to the speeder, but Imbo shoots it out. It turns into a bobsled, sliding down the snowy mountainside! And Imbo, because he's awesome, takes off his metal hat, and he uses it like a snowboard to chase after them! And Anakin calls R2 to bring the ship around as they all slide down the mountain together. And it's an awesome chase scene with Anakin blocking blaster bolts and Padme driving and Imbo just riding along on his hat and shooting at them. And it's actually a lot of fun. Padme gets grazed by a blaster bolt, and Anakin uses the Force to throw Imbo. But just as they're coming up to a cliff, Anakin tells R2 to hurry up, and they fly off the side of the cliff, but there's R2 waiting to catch them on the ship, and they fly away to safety. And Imbo holds up, and Merrick is an adorable puppy who brings him his hat back because he's the cutest, and Imbo tells him, like, good boy. And in a surprise turn of events, Imbo calls into his patron, Papa Palpatine. Papa Palpatine wanted Padme and Clovis to find the missing money and to get away, and he will deal with them personally from here on out. The end.
Or is it the end?
No, oh, like too much episodes.
Well, we're getting another in the last arc. There was that scene where they got Anakin in the Force field, and he was, and it was like Anakin no like, you know.
Yeah.
And back into this with Clovis, except this time it's worse. It's shocking how unprofessional Anakin goes immediately, you know, how petty he becomes, like, especially this far into Clone Wars. It's just like, oh boy, Anakin, yeah. So they're really pushing his emotional weakness and breakdown, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could also argue because, like, he just recently lost Ahsoka, so I'm sure there's a fear, like, I'm about to lose my wife, too.
Oh, well, yeah, there's all but sorts, of, there's all sorts what, of stuff going
that,
to hell around him.
That does not
him.
Make what he said to her okay.
You know, he's... There's all sorts of reasons for him to be, you know, disgruntled, non-gruntled. He should be very low gruntle right now. But, but what this really is all about, and what to me this episode is all about, is that sled chase. I had it down as ski chase first, but it's like two sleds more than anything.
Like it's like a bobsled and a snowboard.
And a snowboard or one of those like just round sleds that kids have. You know, they're either plastic or metal. But it's awesome because of course Embo's hat it serves as everything he needs it to. You know, that's
it's a shield, it's a weapon, it's a bobsled.
Yep. It doesn't matter. Probably is an antenna for his communications too, but it reminds me of I think it was The Spy Who Loved Me, the James Bond movie that had a big ski chase at the beginning of it, and it's just pure Star Wars. It had elements. They definitely combined elements of like the James Bond ski chase and the episode one pod racer race. You know, there were several scenes that were very much like the pod race scene, but oh, it just
so
moves.
So, my brain went to Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings. Yeah. Well, Imbo is.
That, as they were going down, I was like, Jamaica has a new bobsled team. That's where my brain went to.
But yeah, it was fantastic, and it was a first for Star Wars with a downhill snow chase, and so of course we needed it. The only thing that it didn't have, I was totally expecting an avalanche of some sort, you know, like a stray laser bolt to start an avalanche, and then all of a sudden they were both be racing the avalanche, you know, or something like that, or some sort of snow creature comes barreling up out of, but either way it was a wonderful little Star Wars chase.
Yeah, and it sucks, it's like the last 3 minutes of the episode, like I'm like, can we cut out some of the crap from the beginning to have that be way longer,
have it be the whole third act? Yeah
because like the thing is like, or like, yeah, the whole third act where it's just Imbo hunting them for like 7 minutes. That would have been awesome. Because, like, the thing about this episode was, it's a good episode, but, like, that actually, like, bumped it up, like, a whole point for me.
Oh, definitely. That made the episode for me. Although I was enjoying the other parts of the episode also. But that's all I got.
Yeah. Okay, so I have multiple layers. Maybe I should start with the petty ones first. That's always. I'm going to start with the petty notes before I get into the deep emotional things of Anakin and Padme's relationship.
Okay.
Man, this chase scene with Imbo is amazing, and Merrick is the cutest dog. And like, here we go. I'm going to talk about Thrawn again. Ready? It's a really cool moment, like when you see that Anakin senses Embo, and you can see Embo behind him about to shoot.
He actually has like a Spidey sense moment.
Yeah, and like something that they're doing in Thrawn Alliances that's really cool is both Anakin and Vader have these scenes where they go double vision, and it's the Force. And so like Anakin will be fighting, and he'll be like, and he'll say in his mind, he goes, double vision. Bolt coming at my head, my chest, my legs. And then the next line will be like, he blocked his head, his chest, his legs. And yeah. It actually describes what he sees in the Force.
Well, that's from episode one, and Qui-Gon was telling Anakin's mother, you know, he can actually see just a little bit, you know, he can fly things so well because he can see into the future just a little bit.
Yeah.
So he was developing that Jedi skill long before he, you know, it was like just sort of a natural skill for him when he was a kid. He was a kid.
So, but, like, it's cool because they use it both for the Anakin and Vader scenes. So, like, by the way, I have to give it up to Mark Thompson, who, it's hard to do a Darth Vader impression. And he actually pulls it off relatively well. Because he voices every character in the book, and his Darth Vader is actually I snickered the very first time I heard it, and then I'm like, yes, he got it. So I gotta give, because like I said, I'm listening to audiobook and the reading the novel at the same time. So I gotta give props for anybody who actually tries to do a Darth Vader impression. So good job. But yeah, Vader does it too. He'll be like, double vision. And then he'll block. And so, like, that's what that moment reminded me of when he's like, double vision, Embo's behind me! So, I completely forgot that Palpatine was the one behind all this, and he paid Embo. Because I thought it was Clovis trying to make himself look innocent so Padme would trust him. So that's actually a nice twist.
I figured that wasn't as much a possibility when he shot her handmaiden. Then I was like, that wouldn't make sense in the whole thing, but
so what do you think Palpatine wants with all this, Chris? I know the answer. I just want to hear what you says. Why does Palpatine care about the banking clan?
Oh, he wants to sow dissent. He wants to not really sure, actually. I think it might be to transfer money in the future his way somehow. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
But you know.
I do know. That's why I'm just saying okay. I just wanted to hear what you possibly thought, because we'll learn in the next two episodes why. But I just wanted to hear what you were thinking.
So you're not going to tell me what it is now, so okay.
No, because okay. I don't want to ruin the episodes for you.
Yeah, no, I'm not really too clear on Palpatine's intentions right now.
Mm-hmm. So my last note before I go into the emotional turmoil, that is Anakin and Padme. This episode could have been a really boring and dull political episode, like season 3 political episodes, but it's fun, and it's intriguing, and it's great. And so why do you think that this political episode plays differently than, say, like, the season 3 episodes, which weren't as successful?
This one also has, the season 3 episodes were mostly in Coruscant, and this one has a new sort of interesting, it's in a different location. It's got, like, you know, the banking clan guys around. So it's just visually different. It's got a whole different feel to it. So it doesn't feel as much as you were used to these taking place in the Senate hallways of Coruscant, you know. I think that has something to do with it. And the kick-ass chase at the end.
Yeah, because I think that's the other two parts that kind of make this more intriguing. Is Embo, for one. I mean, we said at first 30 seconds, you see Embo's there, so you know he's lurking. So there's always, like, a danger lurking about. And I also think the thing that makes this different is, usually with the political episodes, it's like Padme on her own, or Padme with Bail Organa. But this has her with Anakin and her ex-boyfriend. And there's, an emotional drama that's underplaying all this as well. And I think that actually helps add a layer to it, because not only are we telling the stories of, oh my god, all the Republic's money has been stolen, but there's also, like, Padme needs Anakin to work with her, but he doesn't want to work with Clovis, and she's just trying to keep them from having, like, pissing on each other. So it adds another, like, kind of different layer than what we had in the early ever episodes, where it's like Bail Organa and Jar Jar juggling plates.
Right, right.
All right, here again, the thing of the motions of... I have 1, 2, 3, 4 fucking big notes about Anakin and Padme. Here we go. In the first half of the scene, when Anakin first gets there, and they're talking in the scene, and they're all nice and stuff, before she mentions Clovis, this first half, I was really happy with the direction that they have taken them. Because way earlier in Clone Wars, they acted like newlyweds. Like when they were on the Malevolence, like the first big arc of the show, they're kissing on a train because it's the only time they get the, like, the, and they're flirting and their stuff, and yeah. And like they're acting like newlyweds. But here, yeah, they're flirting too, but a few years have passed. They've been married a few years. And he's sitting, like, you know, he tries to joke, and then he sees that she's not in a joking mood because her friend is dead, and he sits with her, and they're talking like an actual married couple. And it's more serious than before, when they would be like, oh, we're alone, let's kiss and stuff. And so I really, it's a very subtle difference, but between now and the earlier seasons, it's nice to see that develop between them, where they're not newlyweds anymore, they've actually been married a few years. It's a different point in their relationship. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. For sure it is. The honeymoon is over.
Yeah. And there's a war.
Yeah. And they're both at work.
Well, that didn't... They were at work in the Cad Bane episode when he took the Senate building and they were making out in Padme's office.
Yeah, but it's... The stakes seem higher now, you know?
Yeah, she is in jail.
And there's but, yeah.
Yeah, but there was different, there's definitely a different tone. All right, now, the transition from nice newlyweds to Anakin losing his shit. It was really interesting, and I know I mentioned this at the beginning of the episode, watching this episode in comparison to reading Thrawn Alliances, because they're in the same timeline, and now we know in the timeline that they're really close to each other. And there's a lot of the same emotional notes and beats between the two. Because in this episode, the mission's going fine, Padme's in jail, and Anakin is being very nice and respectful, and then the moment she mentions Clovis, bam, his mind shifts gears, and it's not about the mission anymore, it's all about Padme, but not in the good way and stuff like that. And nobody, and like, he is... has a good chance of ruining this mission of Padme's, because he's obsessed in an unhealthy way. Well, that's happened a few times in the book already, where Thrawn is talking to Anakin, and he's like, the mission is stopping the Separatists. That is the victory of this war. And Anakin's like, no, it's Padme. And Thrawn keeps reminding him, we're fighting a war. The victory is the important thing. But when it comes to Padme, his mind has that shift again to where it could hurt a mission, ruin the mission, because he's unhealthily obsessed with her and is going to lose her in that way. And it was really like interesting watching these, like Anakin in the same time period in two separate situations, but still having that same mental part about Padme, where it's almost like this is his, and if he doesn't have his, and if something happens to his, then everything else be damned.
Yeah, then it's done. Yep.
Yeah.
That's about right.
And somebody pointed out on Twitter, and I think it was Kelly from Team Ahsoka, which is another podcast. I think it was her, but I'm not positive because I couldn't find the tweet again. But they were noting how amazingly groundbreaking it was in Rebels that Kanan and Ezra hug. They hug like 4 times in the show. They hug like when Ezra finds out his parents are dead, and when they think Ahsoka is dead, and like Ezra's crying, and Kanan is holding him because he just got blinded, and in the spider caves, I know they hugged again. But yeah, they hug. Then they have this like this physical connection between them. And they were talking about how mind-blowing that must be for, like, Jedi, who are so emotionally stunted. And, like, they're not, like, they don't teach, like, you know, don't hug your, like, Padawans and stuff like that. Like, if someone actually taught Anakin how to cope and embrace his emotions instead of, like, swallowing them down, and they're like, you don't need to have emotions, you need to be neutral and balanced at all times, this episode would probably go differently.
Yeah, the whole Jedi Order would be different.
Yeah, and we might not even get Darth Vader.
Right.
So the fact that, like, at the name drop of Clovis and Anakin snaps, that's the Jedi's fault. That's not actually Palpatine, because Palpatine was like, no, feelings are fine, especially anger, rage, and hate. But feelings are fine. That's the Jedi. This is the Jedi's fault.
Oh, in the end, it's all the Jedi's fault.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
So my last note is, okay, so this is the second half of their conversation in the jail cell. So she mentions Clovis, and Anakin loses his shit. That is a really uncomfortable scene for me to watch as a woman. It's because Anakin is treating Padme like he owns her. And, like, she can't have friends with other men. And especially, like, her ex-boyfriend, which I do understand that section half of it. Yeah, Anakin's justified in, he has a right to be jealous that this is her ex-boyfriend. And also, ex-boyfriend tried to kill her. Or at least last time they were with him, they got him poisoned. I get that. Those are all very valid reasons to not trust Clovis. I totally get it. But, like, it's how he handles it. He doesn't let her explain herself or trust his wife in this situation. He just rolled up 5 minutes ago and is losing his shit. And she's been here for, like, God, it had to be several days. So she is very much more aware of the situation than he is. And it's just very uncomfortable watching a lot of the language he uses. Like, I might leave you behind. You better come before I change my mind. Like, that's very uncomfortable to watch for me. Because when you get
all immature like that, he gets very manipulative. And, yeah, he's being a jerk all around.
Yeah, and it's definitely, like, at this point, it just makes me wonder why Padme is still with him. Because I'm sure, like, they're nice and, like, when they see each other, like, once a month. But, like, stuff like that, like, that is, like, the true nature of her husband. And I think that should be, like, red flags. Red flags, girl. He's gonna strangle you in a few months becoming Vader.
Oh, yeah.
Red flags. It's really... That is by far the most uncomfortable scene, I think.
He doesn't just not tip waiters and kick dogs. He wipes out whole villages of sand people and tells you about it.
Yeah. Like, there's so many red flags, Padme. But, like, I think a lot of it is, like what's going on, like, with society and right now with, like, the Me Too movement and stuff like that. Like, if you, like, a lot of what Anakin's doing is, like, a lot of these descriptions of straight-up freaking emotional abuse. And that's what he's doing. He's manipulating her. Mm-hmm. But I think there's, like, kind of, like, a happy layer to it because, like, he's probably away at war a lot. So they probably only see each other, like, 1 or 2 days a month, if that. Or maybe, like, in passing at work and stuff. So, like, when they're probably together, they probably are, like, happy little newlyweds and stuff, and it's happy. But when it comes to, like, stuff like this and the sand people, I forgot about that. That's a very good point. Like, there's a point where I'm just like, Padme, why are you with her other than plot that she needs to birth Luke and Leia?
Oh, none of the warning signs of Anakin were hidden from Padme. They were right on, you know, that he was open about them. So she, you know, she knew. But that's common in an abusive relationship. The thing about Anakin is he knows.
And it's common in a lot of, like, emotional abuse because there's a lot of manipulation of, like, you have to save me. And we, like... Or, like, you know, if you leave, like, I'm going to kill myself or hurt myself if you leave. So there's a lot of guilt in that. So I'm sure there's some of that, too, where that
guilt
plays
and
into
threats
effect.
And
this is anything, a very serious episode, suddenly.
Anything to manipulate. But that's the thing is he knows right from wrong. And it's only when he gets, like, completely, you know, I mean, jealousy is what just blindsided him there, you know. And there's all sorts of other things that could keep him being fairly impartial and Jedi about it that could go wrong with him and Padme. But when it comes to jealousy, then he's just like, rrr. And especially since she was acting like when he tried to hug her and she was like, no, that's very suspicious and sketchy. So he was probably just like, oh, whoa, that's weird, you know. So, yeah, they were, you know.
But I think that also is Clovis is a creep. He didn't try to hug her any other point and stuff like that. And he was just like, "Oh, let me hug you. You're fine." She's like, "Ah."
Right, so right. But it didn't. But it didn't come off like that to Anakin. To Anakin, it came off like, "Oh, they were hugging before, but she's not gonna hug him in front of me." You know. Or, you know. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
He's irrational about it, but that was just one thing that came off like that to him, and then he was useless. You know, he was just a jerk.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just that entire scene is just very uncomfortable, and I kind of now wish I saved all my happy notes for last because that was my last note. And let's talk about Merrick the dog. It was a cute dog, a little Anuba. Anubas are adorable. And he was all happy.
And a little precursor to the Loth wolves.
Yeah. I think Anubas... and now we're going to talk about Anubas. Anubas, they are... Do you remember when Anakin and Mace Windu got pinned under the ship and R2 had to save him? Those dog thingies were Anubas too, but this is a cute Anuba. It's all white and... And it's adorable, and yeah.
Do you feel better now? Are you comfortable scoring it up now, or do you want to go? You can't. Do you still feel like we're going out on a sour note?
No. Do you feel like we're going out? I think it's a good conversation to have because it's a big, important part of. At this point, they need to be doing this to Anakin story wise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's so close to episode 3. This is it is very important setup to talk about too. And I will let you know for a future episode. I think it might actually be next week's episode.
He should be. It's either next week's episode or the following episode. He should be melting down left and right.
Yeah, and I think we also would like. I think if Ahsoka, for example, would have been here, she would have been like, "Master, I think you're jumping to conclusions," but. He doesn't have that any emotional checks. He doesn't have Obi-Wan there. He doesn't have Ahsoka there. So he's just being a dick.
Free to be a jerk.
Yeah, but I it's not really a sour note. I think it's an important note to talk about at this point in Anakin the stage. And I think it's supposed to be uncomfortable. I think that's a very good moment of storytelling to where you wince. Because Anakin's the hero.
Almost everything should be wincy and uncomfortable at this point where we are in the story.
Yeah, and Anakin's supposed to be a hero, but he's not who he was, you know, season one on the Malevolence jumping ships and making out with Padme.
Right.
I mean, he's gone through a war. He's lost lost Ahsoka. You know, he watched Fives die last arc, and he had to, like, probably comfort Rex after that, watching Rex,
he's getting the seeds of people not trusting the Jedi and the Jedi not trusting each other have been sown too. So yeah, it's not pleasant on any front.
So,
and the war isn't going exactly great either. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yay. Happy episode.
You want me to score it up?
Yeah, I'm done.
I gave it an 8.5.
Ooh!
And it probably would have been about a 7.5 or an 8. But that last chase at the end was just like that. Just filled my Star Wars cup right up, and happy. And Embo, always Embo and Hondo. All those guys that end in O's. Bingo and his Embo and his dog Bingo.
And Cad Bane-o.
And we're on Scipio, so I'm happy as a clam-o. 8.5.
Well, for me, I'm kind of the same way. I was feeling like 7.5, but the chase scene bumped it up for me. This would have been a very straightforward political episode, but they made it better than what it was in the earlier seasons. They add in the layer of Padme and Anakin drama, which is fine, but I like that we got Padme back, and she is like shining on her own in this first half of this episode. And the second episode would have been really squandered if it was just like Anakin being an asshole and like Clovis was there. But then they brought in Impo and his adorable dog who was wonderful, and they had that amazing chase scene. And it's what really, really saves this episode that could have very easily been drowned in nothing but like emotional, catty love triangle bullshit at the end. But there was no there was no time for a love triangle because Embo was trying to kill them. So it was great. So I also gave it, well, I gave it an 8 out of 10 for Embo and his pupper.
So that sounds about right.
Yeah. So I was kind of had everything in it
but humor.
Yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. And this week, we got an iTunes review!
Oh, boy.
First one
in a long time.
In over a year. But it's actually kind of funny because when I was like, oh, man, an iTunes review, and I pulled it up, it's from my friend Bill Meeks. And the thing about Bill is, I've been contributing to his new podcast called The Fakest. I've done 2 episodes so far. So he's my friend from Greetings from Storybrook, when Once Upon a Time was still running. And that's how we met. We met through the Once Upon a Time fandom. And now we're working on The Fakest. I've been in 2 episodes. Well, I found this review funny because Bill is not a Star Wars fan. He does not like Star Wars. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand why people likes it. He wonders why I like it. So he left this review just to be nice.
You're the only person who's ever disclosed that on their podcast, too. I'll just have you know. That's how.
I know.
That just shows you guys the sheer ethics of Hope Mullinex. That's why you get the time machine, Hope.
Well, I just found it funny. Like, I saw that and I was reading it and I was like, I read the review and I was like, Bill hates Star Wars. And then I pulled out my phone and I texted him and I was like, thank you for the nice review, even though I know you hate Star Wars. And he sent me back, like, you're welcome. So I just had to laugh at it. So here you go. There's the title and the review. It's very short.
Oh my God, Hope. Title is Hope Rocks. Rocks in all caps. And the review is, and it's a very non-committal Star Wars review. It says, always love Hope talking about her fandoms.
That's it. That's the review. I'm like, I'm pretty sure he didn't listen to an episode
I'll take it.
I'll take it too, man. I mean, like, yeah, but like, I don't get me wrong, love the Facebook comments. I mean, I love seeing how active everybody is and stuff like that. But iTunes reviews help people find the show. And so, like, when you rate and review on iTunes, it helps more people find the show. So, I mean, so it's always nice to get an iTunes review. I thought it was just so fucking funny that my friend who hates Star Wars left us a review. All right. Candy.
Well, we haven't picked one out, but we haven't done candy in a long time.
Actually,
any preferences?
I'll tell you what. You look, I have to pee like a bitch.
Okay.
And I know we're going to probably talk another like 10 minutes while talking about candy and stuff. So, listeners, I'm going to go pee right fast and then we're going to do candy. So I'm sure Chris will put some jaunty tune in here or something. He's going to talk about something or other. So I'm going to pee right fast. I'm so sorry.
I know just what to play.
Juice.
How about, okay, you want to do this candy thing? Let's do the Huckleberry Gems.
Let me find it. Huckleberry Gems.
It's sort of a brownish, purplish.
Okay, so if you don't know what we're doing, now that I've gotten peeing out of the way, Chris hates American Kit Kats, And so our friend Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, who will actually be getting some new material soon because I mailed him some stuff for Eat It and Beat It. Dario sends us candy from all over the world review. And so he wrote, after flying to a trip to Idaho and talking to a pilot who was from Boise, I had to seek out candy from the Idaho Candy Company, who have been making candy since 1901. I heard that Idaho Spud, which is in here too, but here are some other neat products. So the Huckleberry Jim is from Idaho, and before, because he had heard from a pilot. So as always, thank you, Dario, and we love you, and we owe you. Ah, happy belated birthday. His birthday was a couple days ago.
Yes, it was. Well, it was a few weeks ago now, but yeah.
Well, yeah, now it's recording.
They are shaped like gems, like chocolate gems. Ooh, they're marshmallows.
They have like a berry smell to them.
They got blueberry marshmallow in the middle.
Oh my god, this is amazing. Oh my god.
It tastes like real blueberries.
These are great. Oh man.
This is my favorite candy in a long time, Dario.
But they're not too sweet either.
No, they aren't.
Because usually with like marshmallow, you think it's going to be really sweet. But it's not. It's not very sweet at all. It's not as sweet as I thought it was going to be.
It's just a light blueberry flavor. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dario. We love you so much. Happy belated birthday a few weeks ago.
Just a little more than a couple weeks, I'll be hanging out with Dario again. This time on his turf.
Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is a website for all you people who haven't figured it out, even though you're here listening on the web.
What are websites?
And it's basically got a list of all our podcasts, all our many, many, many podcasts. And you can subscribe there. You can go to our Amazon site there. You can check us out on Facebook. We're on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. We post all our shows. We got the Two True Freaks Cantina, where we all just shoot the shit, basically. We are on Twitter. And our Twitter feed, Two True Freaks, of course, is run by the legendary, the unbeatable Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene!
Who we're going to be putting to work pretty soon to do it. We're going to need a new intro when we segue into Rebels.
And we were talking about that, you guys. We were talking before the show because, you know, our plans when we finished season 6 was going to do the 8 unfinished episodes of Clone Wars that are on clonewars.com. Well, with Clone Wars coming back with 12 episodes, a lot of sources are really hinting that 8 of those 12 are going to be the 8 unfinished episodes, which makes complete sense. So Chris and I have decided that we are going to wait to do the 8 unfinished episodes just to see if the new episodes that are coming.
We don't want to cover the same story twice, especially with a new season of Clone Wars.
Yeah, so, and neither of us has seen it, so we don't want to, like, watch this and have to watch it again. So that way it's completely new and fresh. And if it doesn't happen to be those 8 episodes, then we're going to go back and do it. So we're actually now suddenly going to be doing Rebels much sooner than we thought.
And if it is those 8 episodes, there's 4 other episodes that they won't be doing that we can do, too.
Which is going to be Siege of Mandalore! Siege of Mandalore! I'm so excited.
All right, well, where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at HopeMonax on Twitter. And you can also find me on a lovely little fanfiction website called Archive of Our Own. It's also called AO3 for short. And I write a fanfiction. It is a Thrawn fanfiction. It's a romance. And it's called Forces of Gravity. My name on there is Chaos Lydia. And I also beta read and edit another fanfiction called Valkyrie Strike by Megan, which you guys would have heard two episodes ago when Megan was on the show. And we talked a little bit about our fanfictions as well. It was actually a really fun conversation. And so she actually just put up a brand new chapter, but her fic, mine is a romance covering Clone Wars to Rebels timeline, to New Republic. Hers is set in late Thrawn novels to Rebels timeline, where Thrawn is taking more revolutionary actions because he's realizing... Remember when I was talking about earlier in the episode, I was like, well, Thrawn was there to either strengthen the Empire or make them an easier target. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the other route that he's going in her fic. So. Yeah, that's where you can find me. Go read Forces of Gravity if you like it. Leave me a comment, because that keeps me going in life.
You hear that? Keep her going in life.
It always makes me happy to like pull up a thing and be like, oh, a comment. Actually, something I like to do on Fix, and I wish more people did this, is when I read a brand new fic that's been running for a while, I did this recently with one. It was actually a really fascinating fic. It was so good and so satisfying. It had such a satisfying ending because I hate that Governor Price bitch, and it was wonderful. So what I did is I did kind of like every chapter I left a comment, like, and it was almost like an instant reaction. So like I didn't comment knowing the first, I'd be like, oh, this is what I think is going to happen next right now in this moment and stuff like that. And the writer was like, these are really nice. I wish more people did like instant reactions by chapter. And I'm like, I started thinking, I was like, I wish somebody would do that with mine. Like go chapter by chapter and be like, oh, I think this is going to happen next. And this is great. And blah, 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 blah. So I decided, I was like, this is something that I'm going to do.
Even better,
more
people should make a podcast about it, your fanfic chapter by chapter.
Say what?
Somebody should make a podcast about your fanfic chapter by chapter.
Oh, no.
Then you just have to keep writing forever and ever so they can keep doing their podcast.
That's going to be very stressful.
It'd be a symbiotic relationship.
But, yeah, I mean... So if you ever wanted to read some of my... And Cad Bane's in my fic, too. He's a big major character.
So. I want Embo.
Embo has been in my chapter at one point.
Can you bring Gore back, too?
No. It's post-Clone Wars, so, I mean, Gore is definitely dead, so it's Grievous in this time period.
Somebody got some of Gore's DNA and cloned him.
So, but, yeah, that's... all I got. Sorry we ended the episode on like a depressing note and then me peeing.
That's what they get.
Wow, this is really fun. Well, I'm just going to go pee now. Sorry, guys.
Wouldn't be the first time.
No, it actually, whatever you did last time, you had like a jaunty like little peeing song and it was adorable.
I used it again today. It's all purpose.
Oh, it's so adorable. The first time I heard it, I was like, this is like the cutest thing I ever heard in the world. And then I was like, did Chris write this song just for me peeing right now? And I was like, nah, he probably had this before.
It's been done for, I used to have a program on an app on my iPod Touch that you could just play, you could play a melody into it along with just a click. You know, for a rhythm, and then you could set it to whatever key you wanted, and then you just sang lyrics, and no matter how flat or sharp or whatever, it would, you know, use what do they call it when they auto-tune? It would auto-tune it into a key with the music.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of, I have this little, I used, actually, here it is right here, the... little melodica to play the song, and then I just sang along with it, and that's the song.
It was so, like, the first time I heard it, I was like, this is the most adorable song I have ever heard.
And it's about pee-pee. I got another song about poo-poo that I'll play someday. It's cute, too. It's called Goodbye, Mr. Poop.
Aww. Well,
good night, that's... everybody.
Bye!
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.
Have you ever had the point where you've had to pee so bad to where you can't actually pee?
Yeah.